So based on the organizational common organizational designs that we have been discussing since then, there are two organizational designs merge. Okay, two basic models that merge together. What are those? These are mechanistic model and the organic model. Now, when you hear the term mechanist, what is the first thing that comes to your mind? Too many things. Mechanic. It's mechanical in nature. Right? So it is you know, it has been man-made, it has been created. So that those are the certain things, nuances that comes to your mind, right? So when you talk about mechanistic model, a structure that is characterized by extensive departmentalization, high formalization, and a limited information network and centralization. So things, everything moves as per the channel. Okay, so it just goes one level to the other and to the third and to the fourth, and then finally you get your answers. So that's what is your mechanistic model, which is a structure which is characterized by extensive departmentalization and formalization. Now, what is organic model? The organic model is a structure that is more flat in nature. Okay, it uses cross-functional, cross-hierarchical and cross-functional teams. It has low formalization. It does have formalization set of rules and regulations and all of that, like a mechanistic organization. So here, organic model also possesses a comprehensive information network and relies on participative decision making. Here, decision making is not central, hence it encourages a lot of participation in the decision making process. So as you can see on my left, so these are the two models very explicitly put. Can you see the mechanistic model? Can you see? This manager has got five people reporting into him. This has three, this has again four, three like that. So it has got, it's highly specialized. Okay, so all these individuals who are there, they're all specialized. Okay, and rigid departmentalization. It is, the name itself says it's mechanistic, it is man-made. Okay, it's very, very made, it's very structured. So clear chain of commands. It's very clear that you have a problem, you report to him. You escalated to him, and if he is able to manage, you get your answers, right? You get it approved. Now, if this person is not able to deal or give you a decision or solve the problem here, what he needs to do is he needs to reach here, he need to go there to get a decision from him or an approval from him. And then he says, he comes back, he goes there and he says, okay, this is what is the problem, this is my subordinate facing and he requires this particular budget for his region. Now what he needs to do is, he needs to get this approval from him if he is not qualified to take that decision. Yeah. So the span of control is very narrow and it's centralized. Can you see? The decision making is at the top. Okay, only these four people report to him. These four people goes and then gets the decision from him. Okay, and highly formalized. Yeah, clear. I hope everybody is clear with the mechanistic model. Now we'll move to the organic model. If you see the organic model here, what does the first thing that comes to your mind? As we spoke about, organic is very simple in nature, cross-functional teams work together, cross-hierarchical teams, free flow of information. It does not have set of rules and regulations where you only have to follow proper hierarchy or proper channel to get an information. Here the free flow of information happens. Can you see this? This team can go and, you know, speak to this team if they need to collaborate together, if they need any information. This team can also work with this team. This can also move amongst each other. So wide span of controls, it's decentralized and low formalization. So does not have too much of formalized departments and all of that. So if, as I mentioned to you earlier also, it is more agile in terms of they work in teams. They said, okay, marketing team collaborating with the developing team to complete the project. HR department is working very closely with the ops team to be able to contribute to the business. Okay, so those are your team-based concepts under the model. Now, what are the determinants of organization structure? Let us consider the major determinants of organization structure, which may help us to understand why designs differ, why each design is different. Okay, so now when we talk about design. Why do they differ from each other? So when you talk about designs, these are the four things that are there. Very explicitly put here, organizational strategy, size of the organization, the technology, and the environment. Okay, so this is very, very imperative here to understand that what is the strategy of the organization? Now, when you talk about the determinants, these are the four things that needs to be understood very crystal clear in the beginning. Okay, organizational strategy. What is the strategy for the organization? What is the vision for the organization? Second is, what is the size of the organization? Third is, what is the technology used? And what is the environment that we are operating from? Yeah. Now, when you talk about organizational strategy, structure is a means to attain goals which are derived from organizational strategy. So, structure should follow the strategy, right? So, structure comes later. First is to understand the strategy. What is the vision of the organization? What is the goal that we are talking about? At the end of the year, where is it that I am supposed to reach? Where is it that the organization is supposed to reach? And accordingly, where should I reach? Let us understand the relationship of strategy and structure through three strategy dimensions. So, what are the three strategy dimensions? So, when you talk about dimensions here, these are the three dimensions that we talk about: innovation, cost minimization, and imitation. Now, when the organization is already moving towards cost minimization, I have a question for you. Can we say that, okay, please innovate? Our products are getting completely redundant. We need to relook at our product line. And we, at the same time, I'm also saying that, you know what, we also have to work very, very stringently on financial prudence. Will I be able to innovate now? Probably not, right? So hence, it depends on the organization. Hence, the strategy is what is the main key here. So innovation strategy, under this strategy, organization strives towards achievement of meaningful and unique innovations. You know, innovative strategy requires use of competitive salary and benefits to attract best talented and motivated employees for risk taking. Okay, so if you talk about innovation strategy, you know, it is about striving towards the achievement of meaningful and unique innovations. Okay, and innovative strategy, it requires competitive, obviously you have to provide with competitive salary, you know, the benefits at par with the other organizations, so that you're able to attract the best of talent so that they come and innovate for us. So when does innovation happens actually? So for rapid changes, okay, to take place in a smooth manner, obviously the highly developed, you know, communication channels have to be made, policies for enhancing long-term commitment, and clear lines of authority matrix needs to be clarified. Okay, and the greater use comes from the flexibility of organic structure. The organic structure has to be very, very fluid, have to be very, very lucid in nature. Now, under the innovation strategy, so these are the four things that are there in front of the different types of innovation that takes place. Okay, so first is your disruptive innovation, where you disrupt the whole business, whole you know, ecosystem. One is your breakthrough. You already have this. Say, for example, you have sustained at a particular level and then you want to just double it up. That's what is your breakthrough innovation. The third one is your sustaining innovation. Means you have already innovated, you have already reached a particular level, and now you want to just stabilize. You want to sustain. And the fourth one, which is your adjacent innovation. Adjacent innovations are something which are associated with, you know, where you work on the innovation labs, application centers, and then partnership acquisitions. So what happens is here, you may not be completely working on developing your own product lines. You probably will work with partners to be able to achieve that kind of an innovation. Okay, let's say for disruptive innovation. So it's mostly applicable for mostly entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs actually, goes through disruptive innovations. And, you know, you can see innovation labs and autonomous innovation labs and all of these are part of any, you know, innovation, unless you're sustaining the business. Okay, so corporate ventures, acquisitions, your corporate incubator, corporate accelerator, all these are part of your disruptive innovation. So if I have to give you an example of disruptive innovation, it would be, let's say, you know, the virtual training, which is, I'm not talking about e-learning. E-learning has been there in existence for a while now. But virtual training, which is an instruct, which is also called as VILT, virtual instructor-led training. So that particular training has completely disrupted the whole concept of ILT, which is your instructor-led training. Okay, so this is a complete disruption which has happened, and now sometimes what happens is if we ask the clients also to do a instructor-led training, which is completely a stand-up delivery where participants are there, you know, you are confined to a training room, you know, you have 25-30 odd people sitting there, and you're interacting, doing activities, having lunch together, and then finally filling some forms and giving feedback, and then so that's completely been disrupted now. Everybody, and VILT is kind of here to stay. And from whatever experience I had in the last 2 years, I don't think most of the organizations would now prefer this model, because you're able to cater to much larger audience, because your physical format would always have limitations in terms of number of people that you can influence. I can give you an example. Recently, I've done a workshop for stress management for a client, which is a manufacturing client, and they were 150 in number. And initially I was feeling that how is it possible? Will it be effective? And I got extremely good feedback. And they, basis that feedback, we got another session that we did, you know, the next month itself. They said, you know, we want to do it for the next 6 months. So I signed up a contract with them for the next 6 months, because they felt that in one go, in two sessions, they are able to cover the, it's a small organization of 300, 400 people. So they said, okay, we are able to cover the entire organization. So why should we even get into these, you know, ILT mode, which is instructor-led training? We would prefer a virtual mode. So that's a complete disruption, right? And what is a breakthrough innovation? A completely different ball game altogether. Okay, so you know, you completely moved into another level of you were doing something, and then you know, you completely moved into something else, and you actually excelled in that particular product. Because I know of one of my you know, friend who has been an entrepreneur, and he was dealing with you know, fashion clothes, okay, different brands. So he used to have, his store used to be called as Fashion Hub or something. And obviously, when the pandemic hit, there was no need of any you know, fashion clothes for us. Everybody was confined to homes and houses, and nobody was really, you know, investing on clothes. So what he did was he completely moved his entire business into you know, masks, face masks, and you know, aprons and the other stuff, whatever that is called as, you know, what you require, the COVID restrictions. Outfits that are required to be worn by different people when they step out. So and he was the early adopters. Again, in the beginning, he moved into that, and he was a maverick, okay, who was a quick mover. And today he caters to a lot of airlines. He caters to some two international airlines. Their entire aprons, entire COVID kits goes from him. He sells masks which are so beautiful, so different, designs of masks and different kinds of woven, non-woven, based on your requirement. You can buy sets and buy this. All of that, he has this. This is a complete breakthrough innovation, don't you think so? From a fashion hub to a complete COVID protocol and COVID required stuff or the business. Okay, so here, that's where, this is called as your breakthrough innovation. Sustaining innovation is where you are, you know, at this point in time, there's a seasonal requirement. There is, you know, you have roadmapped it, you have engineered it. Now you have your process has been set. Now you want to just sustain it. You do not want to go here, there. You do not want to bring any change. You want to just continue with what you're doing well. Adjacent is innovation. As we said, we partner it and we sell their products and say that, okay, this overnight the company becomes very, very large in nature. And then you go ahead and you pitch for the entire your organization as well as your partner organizations. And then you pitch for. So that is called as your adjacent innovation. For example, you only have offline solutions that you have been selling to the, you know, different industry sectors. And that was working very well earlier. But now suddenly the remote working, you know, solutions have been a demand. But you do not have the expertise of providing that solution. So what do? You kind of liaise with, you know, a partner company who is already doing very well in that space, but they're not really selling that as a solution, HR solution maybe. So then what you do is you collaborate with them, you create a complete package of it, and you completely sell that particular product. And that's what is your adjacent innovation is. Yeah, I hope all of you have understood the innovation strategy well. Now, as we spoke about in the beginning itself, it depends on the organizational strategy. First was innovation. Second is cost minimization strategy. Now, if we are working on cost minimization, financial prudence, which is technically used mostly by most organizations. Organizations following the cost minimizing strategy follow tight cost control. They refrain from making any unnecessary expenses. They will cut prices and on the basic product as well. Okay, so overall they are minimizing cost, so hence even their product lines and everything has been re-looked at. Okay, so the idea is to minimize the cost, okay, of the production so that we are able to get better profits. Then comes your imitation strategy. Now what do you hear, what do you understand by the word imitation? Organization following an imitation strategy attempt to minimize the risk and maximize the profits. How? By introducing new products or entering new markets only after innovators have proven their viability. They do not take decisions of their own. Okay? They have seen what has worked well. They have seen the market. They have seen the brands have taken in their stride and they have moved on. These are not early adopters. Okay? They are the ones who watches the market, sees what has worked well. The innovation strategy worked well there. So now we are going to come up with this on the same lines or maybe replicated. Okay, so imitator organizations, as the word suggests, imitation is about copying the other person, it's following the other person. Okay, so imitator organizations combine the two structures, both the mechanistic and the organic structure. Then comes your organization's size. So all of us believe with the term called size does matter, right? So the size of the organizations determines its structure. Large organizations, which employs, you know, maybe more than 2,000 people, tend to have more specialization, more departments involved, more, specialists working in the organization, more vertical levels, more hierarchies, more rules and regulations, okay, then the small organization. So obviously any organization which will have more than 2,000 people, they will always have larger structures, more complications, more strategies, more formulations in place, compared to a smaller organization. Size becomes less important as an organization expands. Okay, so when the organization becomes larger in terms of number, in terms of market share, obviously the size does not matter as much. Okay, now comes your technology. Now, what is the technology? Technology is basically the manner in which an organization is actually deriving its input versus outputs. Right? So the way you will transfer your input to output will actually be able to give a clarity on the kind of technology that you're using. For example, if your reports are automated, you already follow automatized systems and processes to get your reports. You know how, what kind of technology you might be having, technology which is giving out all these things in, you know, in a specified manner that you had put together. And non-routine activities are customized and it requires frequent revision and updations. Okay, so the things which are not routine in nature, which are not doing it every day, and you know, are completely requires customization. However, for the routine ones, you completely automatized it. Okay, and you completely standardize it, saying that no matter what it is, this is the way it is going to happen for the routine activities. In general, organizations engage in non-routine activities, they prefer organic structures. While those performing routine activities will always prefer mechanistic ones, because routine activities will always allow you to have a standardized version of the work. So hence, a mechanistic organization will always have prefer routine activities. Now comes your environment that we are working on, the environment that we are operating from. So outside institutions or the forces that can impact an organization's performance, like, for example, the suppliers that you're working with, the customers that you're working with, the competition, the government regulatory agencies, public pressure, you know, groups that constitute the organization's environment, all these, you know, are constitutes the environment. A dynamic environment forms greater uncertainty for managers that does us than a static environment, isn't it? Don't you think so? A dynamic environment will always, because it's dynamic, it's always a lot of changes are happening, very challenging, and changes happening on everyday basis. There you will always have a lot of uncertainties, right? So managers would not prefer, it will not have a static environment. So hence, the managers who prefer stable life and stable job will always find it difficult. Okay. In order to minimize uncertainties, the managers tend to broaden their structure to sense and respond to threats. This is what a lot of managers does. Just to minimize the uncertainties, what they do is they will broaden the structure and accordingly face the stress, accordingly act upon the threats. Okay, so when and the composites of environment are capacity, volatility, and complexity. So these are the three things that we operate when you talk about the environment. Okay, the capacity, which means the extent to which the environment supports the organizational growth. If at all the organization, the environment is not supporting, in case of some damage that you're making to the environment, and capacity is only so much, and you're increasing that level of commitment, you will have problems. You will not be able to grow. Second is your volatility. What is volatility? Volatility means the extent to which the environment is unstable. Every day there is some change. Every day there is some market regulation which has come, and suddenly there is a change. Whatever plans have happened, you always end up making 3, 4, 5 plans together, and you know, one after the other you keep executing. Okay, and you keep changing the plans as well. So hence it is very, very volatile in nature. So environment could be, so to the extent that the environment is unstable. So after volatility is the complexity. So complexity means to the extent of heterogeneity and the concentration amongst the environmental elements. Okay, so what happens here is that if you are if you're involved in too many complex actions, which probably impacts the environment, that's where your organizational structure can be in question as well. So hence these three things needs to be operated in such a fashion that the environment is taken care of. The capacity of the environment, the volatility of the environment while you're doing the business. The third is the complexity of your tasks that are there pertaining to the environment. So when the organizations operates with scarce and very, very dynamic and complex environments, they come across greatest level of uncertainty. Obviously, isn't it? So there's dynamism everywhere, there's complexity everywhere, and then you're working with limited resources already. And so because of this high unpredictability in concern, it limits the scope for mistakes and have variety of elements to monitor constantly. So some general conclusions about based on the three dimensions that we have been speaking of are that the scarcer, the dynamic and the complex the environment, the more organic structure should be, and it reverse conditions a more mechanistic structure. The more dynamic, the more complex the environment is, organizations will always prefer an organic structure. And it will be completely the other way around when it comes to the mechanistic structure. Okay, they will always prefer more stable environment, more organization to do with routine tasks. So that's where you will have more of mechanistic structures. So people would have different preferences about their work environment, isn't it? I mean, everybody, all of us have our own likes and dislikes. And not everybody may prefer the freedom and flexibility of an organic structure. So a lot of people would prefer organic, but however, not everybody would. Research with respect to organization design have proved that mechanistic organizations provide higher level of fairness owing to formal policies and procedures, because of the fact that it has been so formalized, it's been so structured, hence the employee satisfaction is also higher, because when they see that they are growing from one, for example, the operations department comprises of say 7 levels, okay, and the person joined is a operational executive with 2 years of experience, and then he has grown to senior operational executive, then he became a team leader, then he became an assistant manager, and then a manager, and then probably AVP, and then VP. So those kind of structures actually creates a little bit of belongingness to the organization and to the belongingness to the minds of the employees, because they feel that they're growing. Okay. Whereas in a flatter hierarchy, in an organic structure, people may feel that, I'm lost. To be able to make it to the cabin, it is like, I'm sitting here, I'm already a manager. I need to be a project manager to be able, I'm an assistant manager. I want to be, in order to make it to the, make my way to the cabin, I have to become a project manager or the project head. So my distance from X to Y is because this project manager is young enough. He is not going to go and he's very stable in the organization. So what is it that I have to switch? Since it's an organic structure, you do not have too many formalizations created that this person can do a role shift and all of those things. Okay, so hence it becomes a limitation at times. The relationship between span of control. Now, research with respect to organization design also shows that the relationship between span of control and employee performance is dependent on individual differences and abilities, task structures and other organizational factors. Okay, so there is sometimes an inverse relationship as well. So a decentralized structure offers greater economy, because when everybody is able to take their own decisions and not concentrated on the center, people are able to exercise their own decision making. It has been positively related to, and people say that research says that there is higher levels of job satisfaction there wherever there is a decentralized structure. Thank you so much. We have come to an end of chapter 10. Thank you so much.